together.
Welcome to America Tonight. Michigan goes to Romney, so does Arizona. So much for, I don't think he can win in his own backyard. It happened. Ann Romney, Mitt Romney's wife, wants to strangle the press, but it doesn't matter. It's a moot point as the show moves on. 41% Michigan-wise went to Romney to the 38 for Rick Santorum, who put up a pretty big fight and was trying to sway the Democrats to jump into the fray there. So he still ended up with some important momentum. It's far from over because you still need 141 delegates to walk down the red carpet in Tampa and claim the Republican nomination. If there isn't, it's 1,144. If there isn't a brokered convention, because now that's still a very hot, hot topic. But let's break it down for you right at the top. 29 delegates in Arizona. Boom. That's all in the back pocket of Mitt Romney. So you move from the desert to the Midwest. In Michigan, 28 of 30 delegates are based on those districts, the congressional districts. So it's a little bit different. Two delegates for each district that you win. So that gets split up, in other words. But the overall goes to Romney. He won the most, let's put it that way. What was incredibly interesting to me is how people didn't feel, a lot of people in Michigan didn't feel like great about the choices. 45% when they were leaving the polling places said that they favored the candidate they voted for. Okay, 45%. But then you say to yourself, wait a second, I took second grade math. If I add up all the numbers, that's not right. Where's the rest of them? 38% had some reservations. So they weren't feeling great about the choices. 16% flat out said they made the choice because they didn't like the alternative. So what does that say? Wishy-washy, not completely on board. The establishment guy is Mitt Romney. Everybody wants Mitt, who's sporting some kind of a political title, but I don't know that everybody wants Mitt, who's playing around in the backyards in America. You know, all of the middle class, the people in the cul-de-sacs, the people in the burbs, I'm not so sure they're on board with the Mitt Romney Express. It certainly doesn't seem that way. Other big story on the day, and I feel compelled to talk about it right out of the chute here and seg from politics of a different sort. I think when they hand out student handbooks in the future, it's, you're going to see at least a few paragraphs or pages in there that tell you how to survive a school shooting. That's what happened in Chandron, Ohio, as we know, and really rocked that small town's world just outside of Cleveland. A third student died in after that shooting rampage at the Ohio High School. Very, very sad. I mean, they were in critical condition, and one was stable or seemed to be stable. So a couple still hanging on, but three now dead as a result of what 17-year-old T.J. Lane did. T.J. Lane got a gun from his uncle. He didn't give it to him. He took the gun from his uncle, stole it, whatever. It was a legal gun because there was some issue about, how did he get the gun? And was it left around? Because there's nothing but questions when you see a headline about a student opening fire on some other students. And apparently it was very random. Sad to see the pictures of the kids because you just feel for their parents. They get the phone call, you know, your kid's been shot and he's probably barely hanging on in the hospital. They might not put it that way, but that's how it was for these kids. So now you have Demetrius Hewlin, who died, and his parents released a statement just saying that they're saddened by the loss of their son and the others in the Chardon community. And the family said that he was a happy young man who loved life, his family and his friends. What else are they going to do but go through the grieving process that they weren't expected to go through? You know, there's something that's just not natural and doesn't feel right, as you can talk to any parents who have lost their children. It's an unnatural process when your children die before you. It's a very hard thing to accept, and especially at the hands of another teenager who shoots off 10 rounds of his uncle's guns into the guts of your children. There were two other students that were wounded in the shooting. Another student, as we know from the other day, 16-year-old Daniel Parmenter died just right after that shooting. And you can tell that this community is just absolutely devastated by what's happened here. And now it looks like he's going to be tried as an adult, which I think is interesting. And I say thumbs up to that. Absolutely. So here's the deal. The superintendent, Joe Bergant, talked about just condolences and trying to survive this for the people that are left behind in the wake of the rampage. And the ultimate thing, the moment of silence.
With news this afternoon that a third victim has now died from this tragedy, may I ask that we have a moment of silence, please, in their memories. My thoughts and prayers are with these victims and their families. Words cannot really express what I'm feeling and the rest of our staff are feeling at this time.
That's because there are no words for this. The Judge Timothy Grendel said this.
TJ be returned to the detention, the custody of the Geauga County Sheriff. I thank the sheriffs for their fine work. And please take him back into custody for transfer to the detention facility. You understand, TJ, that you have the right to remain silent with respect to any of the allegations pending in this court at all times. You understand that?
All right, so here's the thing. He has taken responsibility, basically. He realizes you can hear that in the background. That's the actual sound in the courtroom. And at this point, the 17-year-old is going to be tried as an adult. I mean, that's what they're saying. Adult charges are being leveled at him for what happened here. It's pretty clear. I think it's pretty cut pretty clearly what happened. There's a slew of witnesses. He opened fire on the group before being chased from that building by a teacher. We know this, but and then apprehended by the cops about a half a mile away. So TJ Lane's family, I mean, are they in shock? How are they feeling? It's an awful, awful thing to happen to a small suburban area, to any parent, to any kids who are trying to figure out why their friends died and not them and how it was random and all that kind of stuff. I mean, how does this happen? How do you get beyond this tragedy? As I said, the student handbook, I think pretty much all over the country is going to have to include something about what to do if somebody comes into your cafeteria, your building, and they're armed. Can you imagine? You have 14-year-olds reading the student handbook, the rules of what they can and cannot do, and having to be worried about where the exits are in case something like that should happen. And it's not so far from the future. I guarantee they already have drills. I know they have drills in a lot of schools as what you would do should something like this occur at the school. And in fact, that school had the drills. And so a lot of the students knew what to do and got away. And, of course, texting there is an example of where texting is good. Texting immediately flew all around that building, and that was that. People were able to stay away, some of them anyway. Some of the kids were able to stay away. But he hasn't, you know, police didn't release the shooter's name originally because he hadn't been charged. The motive still very, very unclear as to what made TJ Lane open fire. You want to throw in your two cents? You're invited to the party here on America Tonight. We're going to talk more about the primaries next on ATN. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis.
but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Think the national debt is $15 trillion? Boston U economics professor Lawrence Kotlikoff astutely points out that after factoring in guarantees such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and defense expenditures, the national debt is closer to $211 trillion. Mathematically, this debt is not serviceable via taxation, and for politicians on Capitol Hill, default is not an option. So we can expect the Federal Reserve to monetize the shortfall, resulting in even more confiscation of our hard-earned savings via inflation. Hi, my name is Adam Miller with Midas Resources. In light of the MF Global swindle, it is now more apparent than ever that our savings investments are not secure in the hands of traditional banking institutions overseen by government technocrats kept in their back pockets. Call me today at 800-686-2237, extension 148, to find out how you can protect your savings from confiscation with liquid, portable, and private precious metals. I'll even send you a booklet titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold to serve as a guide. That number again is 800-686-2237, extension 148. 800-686-2237, extension 148.
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally. Instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer. Localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. Localmakers.com, promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the
So isn't that a kick in the head? All of the comments about Romney going down, down, down in Michigan, it didn't happen. Granted, he didn't clobber Santorum in Michigan, but he still walks away with the win. I'm sorry, a win is a win is a win. Remember, the delegates are broken up differently there, so it's not like he got all the delegates. That's not how it works. I've already explained that. But he still takes the win. And for a week and a half, maybe even longer than that, maybe 2.5 weeks or so, that's what you've been hearing. That's that little buzz. He's not going to win. Santorum's got momentum. This is where he's from. His father was governor. How could he possibly get the Republican nomination, for goodness sake, if he can't even win his own state? You can't win your own state? Get out of the way. Let somebody else step in and do the work. So it didn't happen. But still, Rick Santorum does pick up some of that mojo. This Santorum train somehow, whether it's the crazy train at times or not, is rolling on down the tracks. And a lot of people are jumping on board. What does it matter? Well, Super Tuesday becomes, I think, even that much bigger. The debates, there was 20 of them. It's interesting, when you look at the amount of debates in this news cycle, it has increased, or this time around, since 2008, it has increased so much. The debates attracting, you know, the highest, like 7.63 million. It's crazy. I mean, this, how many people were watching, because they want to know, they wanted to see what was going to happen, whether they thought there was going to be a train wreck, an argument, a blame game, whether they wanted to heckle the candidates from their TV sets in their living room, or learn more about whatever the particular issues were of the day, because that to me was the most interesting thing. the Republican debates are done. They're done. 20 of them, and that's it. Unless somehow they're roped into another one. So if you were hoping, as this moves on, as the GOP extravaganza moves on to the next states, if you were hoping that you were going to get more of this debate stuff, the answer is that you're not going to get that unless they agree to do another, because I know that there's pressure to do some more, but I just don't think we're going to see that. If I'm Romney, if I'm any of them, if I'm Newt Gingrich, maybe I want the debates because he claims to be the great debater and he's the only one who can debate Obama. Therefore, I am, and I want to be in my element. So Mitt Romney, a couple of things about Mitt Romney. Earlier in the day, he seemed pretty confident, but he talked about some mistakes he made, and he just moved on down trying to shake some hands, get some people to vote out there. And ultimately, at the end of the day on Tuesday, this is what he was saying.
Okay, first thank you was the first state to call it. Thank you, Arizona. Great victory in Arizona tonight. And thank you, Michigan. What a win. This is a big night. Thanks, you guys. Special thank you to Governor Jan Brewer there and Senator John McCain. They were tireless, particularly John McCain. He's been all over the country helping. What a hero. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Governor. I believe this is a time that requires real leadership in our country. Our times are tough. We need leaders who will live with integrity, who have the courage to tell the truth, and have the experience to get our economy back on track. He thinks he deserves a second term. He says we can't wait, to which I say, oh, yes, we can.
All right, so yes, we can. That was the word of the day for Mitt Romney. Let's go to Don in Wyoming. Hey, Don, how are you?
Hello, Kate. How are you?
You're a Romney fan, so did you think he was going to take Michigan and you just, you know, ignored all the nonsense leading up to it?
It sounded like there was a question there whether he was or not, but I was just kind of like, man, this is kind of that was going to be a black eye. He would have to carry the rest of the election even into November if, you know, he couldn't take his home state, you know.
Yeah.
So for his sake, he was, you know, lucky to come out ahead there, you know. And, okay, there's been this question because in his, I watched his victory speech, whatever you want to call it, and mostly he just pointed everything towards the economy, trying to get the economy going. Most people know he's Wall Street's boy right now.
Yeah.
And you see the Occupy America, whatever movement, that's Occupy Wall Street, trying to get tell Wall Street to spend money to get the economy going. They're not going to do that unless one of their guys is in the presidency. We've talked about this a few times, you know. Yeah, that's just the way it is. When you look at the American economy right now, I said, well, Obama hasn't done anything really good, but he hasn't done anything really great since he's been the president. The one thing that he has done that should put a big question mark in people's heads, Kate, is that the man spent $5 trillion in less than 4 years. Okay? And no president's ever done that, spent that much money that we do not have in that amount of time. Okay?
That's right. Yeah, right.
When Bush took over, okay, the country was at he took over, the country was at $6 trillion in debt, and when he left, we were at $10 trillion in debt, okay? So he ran up a $4 trillion deficit in 8 years, not 4 years, eight. But at the same time, what went along with that, Kate, is our GDP was at $9 trillion, and when he left, it was at $14 trillion. So he raised the economic growth of America by $5 trillion. Just for people to get an idea of what that is, China has a $7 trillion economy right now, okay? So he almost did the whole economy of China, and there's not many other countries that are even close to $5 trillion. But in any case, though, so the point is, as he was adding debt, the economy was still growing, okay? We went up, to $14 trillion. Since Obama has become president, it has gone nowhere. It has stayed right in neutral, you know, waiting for somebody to kick it into gear. You know, the economy has not grown, okay? It hasn't gone backwards, stagnant or whatever, to where we're down to like $12 trillion in GDP You know, it's just not gone anywhere. So most of Romney's speech was about trying to get this economy going forward. Well, here's the question mark, Kate, and this is something I hope you can kind of catch, because this is something I see in the background, okay? All right, now you know my home state of Utah, right?
Right.
Okay. What is Utah famous for other than the Ute Indians?
What are they famous for? Mormons.
Right, okay. How many times has Utah ever voted for a Democrat in the presidency? Never. Okay?
So your point is that there would be a giant Mormon rally, so every Mormon, almost like
what I'm trying to point out here, okay, is that the Mormon faith is traditionally conservative, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Conservative values, et cetera. Is Mitt Romney number one before anything else? He's a Latter-day Saint. He's a Mormon.
Okay?
He doesn't smoke. All his boys, he went on a mission. All his boys have gone on missions. Church, okay? He married in an LDS temple with his wife.
Right.
He is a Latter-day Saint, okay? Now, none of that's been coming out, but if most people sit back and say, well, if he's conservative, as are the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, why doesn't he come out and talk conservative like Rick Santorum? And I listened to some of Rick Santorum today, Kate, and the man's a conservative, and I like him. I really do. But here's the issue, what you and I have talked about a couple of times, okay? The country is divided, 60% Democrat, 40% Republican. The Republicans cannot win with a conservative. That's why all the polls have Romney just behind Obama and the possibility of beating him in the race. Okay? Even when he was the governor of Massachusetts, Romney didn't talk conservative because he knew to get anything done, he was going to have to reach across the table and have them Democrats help him to get it done, the moderate Democrats. That's the only chance the Republican Party has right now. They have to take 10-15% of the moderate Democrats have to vote for Romney. If they don't, if it's a straight vote, Obama will win the re-election again. That's the way it's split right now, Kate. I don't know what caused it to go that way, because it didn't used to be that way. It used to be the country was about 70% Republican and 30% Democrat back in the 50s with Eisenhower and all. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because of all the illegal immigrants that have come to the United States and become U.S. citizens and they vote Democrat. I don't know if it's just, we probably could spend all night trying to figure out what reasons why the country has become more Democrat, i.e. liberal, i.e. wanting socialism than conservative values.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. No, you're right about that. You've got to be able to make the leap, and the analogy especially, which is what backfires, though, for Romney with a lot of people, is when he was the governor of Massachusetts. That's what the whole health care thing, Romney care, you know that, absolutely. Don, thanks for the call. Coming up on the flip side, gasoline prices still bugging a lot of people.
Sure, there are winter specials, and then there are super winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Battle through this cold and flu season with powerful, natural, and safe flu fighters like Elderberry Power, Orgicillin, Olive Leaf Capsules, Grapefruit Seed Extract, and Respir 8, all specially priced during the winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't forget Vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, sale priced at only $9. We also have a super winter special on 6 homeopathic liquid detoxes. Whole body detox, liver detox, kidney detox, lymph detox, brain detox, and lung detox. All liquid detoxes, regularly $26.95, are now just $20. HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on now and save big when you hit the winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
These are strange days indeed, from economic turmoil to weather-related events, and yes, even power outages. Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here. Let me tell you why I use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides the most affordable and complete ready-made meals for emergency preparedness and outdoor use. Their entrees like pasta Alfredo, savory stroganoff, and apple cinnamon cereal carry a 25-year shelf life and are prepared in minutes simply by adding water. They even provide great-tasting a la carte items like freeze-dried fruits, vegetables and desserts to ensure that you have more nutrition and energy when you need it most. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com today to request a free entree sample and see for yourself why they are the best in the business. For a limited time, enter the promo code Lewis to get no-cost shipping on any order. That's WiseFoodStorage.com or call 1-855-FOODWISE and be sure to mention the promo code Lewis for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Be wise and be ready with WiseFoodStorage.com.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. UtopiaSilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now UtopiaSilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details on your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
Tornadoes, earthquakes, and terrorism have moved the dates of major sporting events. This time, it's politics. That's next on Sports Shorts with me, the Sports Princess.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Stouffer's, helping bring your family together with wholesome dinner options, even on the busiest of nights. Find dinner table ideas to bring your family together at letsfixdinner.com. To get kids involved in dinner time conversation, ask specific questions, not broad ones. Instead of what happened today at school, try what was the best thing that happened today. The more specific you are, the more they'll have to say. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
For the first time since 1948, the NFL is opening its season on a Wednesday. Why? Blame it on President Obama. He's addressing the Democratic Convention on September 6th, so the NFL commish, Roger Goodell, shifted the traditional Thursday night kickoff. The Giants will host the game, and at this point, an opponent hasn't been named. There have been other big moments in sports that had to be moved, like the 1989 World Series game between the A's and the Giants. That was Game 3, moved for a week after a 6.9 quake rocked the Bay Area. Hurricane Ivan in 2004 disrupted a series between the Expos and the Marlins. That disaster sent the game to Chicago's Cellular Field. By the way, Florida took both. Snow forced a series between Cleveland and Seattle to be rescheduled in April of 2007. The league scrambled for the tribe's next opponent, the Angels, and the two teams played in Milwaukee. Sports, maybe it's best to sometimes expect the unexpected. I'm the Sports Princess with Sports Shorts. By the way, on that Sports Shorts, the NFL schedules will be out in the next couple of months. That's why the Giants, no opponent yet. We just know that the Giants are hosting the game in New York, and it's going to be not on the traditional night where you'd normally have it on a Thursday, as I mentioned there in that piece, but that it would be on Wednesday instead because they felt like they couldn't move it since the convention was happening then. So a little bit of a shift. You've been thinking about NFL schedules.
Schedules. Well, you know, planning, you know what they say about planning. When you make plans, God makes other ones or something like that. The big plans were that Rick Santorum was going to take Michigan and pound that into the Romney folks. It didn't happen, although if you were to count the congressional districts, certainly Rick Santorum took a bunch of those. I mentioned how that's parceled out. But it's a small amount that we're talking about. The significance still is the win for Romney. Didn't get any kind of a landslide, if you want to call it that, since we're talking about delegates. But he still wins, so he saves face. As everybody was ready to take him down, he saves face. Rick Santorum did not win Michigan, did not win Arizona, although Arizona was a winner-take-all, rare winner-take-all. And, you know, he pockets 30 delegates out of that duel in the desert. It's really Super Tuesday, though, because it's just shy of 500 delegates you're talking about. So if you're Santorum, you add up the numbers, then, you know, you're getting closer to halfway home the amount that you need to win the nomination. The Republican establishment has crowned this man king. End of story, even though a lot of people that call this show love Ron Paul, like Ron Paul, or they like the alternative in Rick Santorum because he's a hard right turn, even if sometimes he's not quite your speed, because he'll say some oddball crazy thing. It's almost like in the heat of running, you think about it, you get swept up into the emotion of it. You've gone through 20 debates. You're all over the map, shaking hands, talking to people, trying to raise money, doing all the things that you have to do when you're a politician and beyond. So the battery of questions over and over and over again, and you realize that you've got to, you know, you are feeding the honey to the rest of the hive, so you're pouring down that lane. And Rick Santorum is conservative, and he is a hard right, and he's feeding that, pumping that. And I think Mitt Romney made a mistake when he tried to be that hard right turn that he is not. And when people smoke that out, if in running you're saying anything, just let me come up with whatever I can along the way to grab some attention to get people to vote, that can be a dangerous road to take. If you're more authentic, which I'm not saying Romney's not authentic, I don't necessarily get that feel. He's just more scripted, I guess. And then he bumbles into a few things and he tries to correct it because they read the news. You know, that's the thing. They're reading their own headlines. They're paying attention to the crap that's being said. And I think when you run, you have to, in a way, you have to put yourself in a bubble and just focus on the people, focus on drilling down the issues and not worry about all the sounds around you. Let the other people around you do that. But it's not that way in these campaign huddles. That's not how it works. So they look at all the headlines. They pull all the papers. They look for the favorable lines, and they look for the things that aren't working, and that's where things sometimes will unravel for a candidate. I think that happened to Romney the last time around, even though he didn't have the wind in his sails like he does this time. This time around, it's almost like, and that's the problem with it, here you go, we owe you. Here we go, we owe you. So Romney has talked about gas prices, and I've mentioned this, that if you wanted to look back to where we were back in 2008, since we keep doing that with the deficit, if you look back to 2008 when the president was running, the current president was running, gas prices were 187. People were complaining about 187. Now there are some people in this country that are paying $5. I'm talking about regular, a gallon, but in the fours. In the fours somewhere, unless you're getting a discount, some kind of a gas discount. I'll tell you how this becomes part of the vernacular, part of the conversation, and I'll give you a glimpse into my own world. I'm in New Jersey broadcasting this show. My husband is back in Texas, and when he called me today, do you know the first thing he said to me? The first thing he said was, oh, you're not going to believe it. I got this huge gas discount. Really? What was the gas discount? I got 70 cents off a gallon, so I paid $2.50, and I filled up your car. I paid $2.50, and I filled up your car. This is how we talk. This is the buzz in the backyard, and all of you are having the same conversation, although I bet nobody can say that they paid $2.50. So I want you to hear Senator Harry Reid, Senator John Thune, and Senator Mitch McConnell talking about gas prices.
As everyone knows, we're producing more oil now than we have in several decades. And that's very, very important. We're doing that.
I don't think there's probably any more clear example of where policies that this administration has failed to put into place have really hurt the American people than the issue of energy.
America is an energy-rich country. It is high time we began to exploit the resources that we already have.
All right, so two Republicans, one Democrat, different points of view, and, you know, the president, if it gets to 6-7, he's definitely going to take a tumble down the hill, because that is the one thing that will, I think, will cut off Obama, I think would really be played up, and people feeling the pinch and not being able to afford to fill up the SUVs, to cart the kids around, all that sort of stuff. I think that would take its toll, and that would make the race closer without a doubt. That would become certainly issue 1B, 1A, whatever, all surrounding the economy and what you can and can't afford any longer and how it's tough in the suburbs in the United States. Let's go to Sam across the border in Montreal. Hello, Sam.
How are you doing, gorgeous?
Fabulous. And you?
Lovely.
I like it.
Okay. I mean, you were just complaining about gas prices. I mean, a few years ago, we were saying, oh, poor America, look what we're paying here in Canada. At the rate you're going right now, you're going to be paying almost as much as we do here in Montreal.
Yeah, what are you paying in Montreal? Give us a quick, like, today.
As of tonight, because Julie and I went out to dinner with friends, we're paying $5.76 a gallon.
Ooh, $5.76, that stings.
Yeah, you know.
Too much.
Yesterday afternoon, we were only paying $5.25.
So how was that? It just jumped up that high?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, you know, here, especially here in Quebec, you know, it's mostly taxes, but you can't compare, you know, unfortunately, you can't budget for, okay, it's $5.76 as of tonight. Who knows what it's going to be like, you know, by Friday. You know what I'm saying? Especially here in Montreal. Because of what's going on, you know, in the Middle East and things like that. So, you know, go figure.
Yeah, go figure, exactly.
Are you serious that if it does go $5 a gallon, Obama's history?
No, I think if it goes, I think he's history if it goes $6. If it goes $6, they're going to have a hard time spinning that around because people will be enraged. Six is not affordable to someone who's living on an income of, you know, under $100,000, under $40,000. It's just not affordable. You got to have a second job, a third job.
Right.
Our man, let me give you an example. Our man Jack from Down Under, Jack Alexander, just sent me something. He said it's 6:23 in Australia.
Ooh.
That hurts. So what are you driving around in the, you know, you're not driving around. What are you, you're riding your bike. You're coming up with alternatives. You're hopefully not having to burn a lot of fuel.
Right.
That's not affordable when you've got a big family, especially.
And, okay, sort of put the sports analogy in, but I mean, like, up here in April, there's a big organization that always has a men's hockey tournament, and a lot of teams come up from the States. And like you said, if they're going to be paying $6 a gallon, a lot of these teams are going to say, forget it. Even if they charter a bus, it's still going to, you know, the cost of the gas from the charter bus company they pass on to the customer. So, you know, it's a no-win situation.
Yeah, it's a no-win situation. You're right.
Right.
And
you
feel it with the food prices. That's what happens because of the trucks.
I mean,
we could go on and on. It's not just simply, oh, I'm pulling my car up to the pump and look what I have to pay. Sam, thanks. You take care.
Take care.
Coming up next, speaking of family, I'm going to introduce you to someone in mine, and we're going to kick it around about this big, big thing that's happening in New Jersey related to the kid that jumped off the George Washington Bridge that connects New Jersey to New York after he was webcammed by his roommate. Stay with us.
Did you know that how well your brain works is directly dependent upon how well your gut works? Did you know that an inflamed or compromised digestive system directly contributes to poor focus, depression, irritability, attention deficit, and hyperactivity? By eliminating the inflammation in your intestines and by having good bacteria populations, you may enjoy better brain function. The most important protein your body needs to keep inflammation down is glutathione. The number one food to support a dramatic increase in glutathione production is undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows. Virtually all whey proteins are damaged by heat, filtration, and chemicals, except one. One World Whey is the most life-giving whey protein on the market. It is changing the lives of its users in very positive ways. One World Whey may act as one of the most important health foods to support your and your child's optimal brain function. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds can become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true. Seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank, and it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full acre crisis garden. So visit them today at survivalseedbank.com. That's survivalseedbank.com, or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for SurvivalSeedBank.com.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. You know, we've been talking about this trial a lot and the repercussions of what's going on at Rutgers University, what happened to one student who ended up committing suicide, actually jumping off the George Washington Bridge after his roommate had spied on him with a webcam, found his secret out that he was seeing men or had been fooling around with a man, and then posted that all over the internet. The poor guy was humiliated, couldn't handle it, and ended up taking a dive off the bridge, like I said, and horrified so many people. His name was Tyler Clementi, killing himself just days after the encounter that he had that was released on the World Wide Web. So we thought it'd be fun to talk about the, like I said, the repercussions of this, legally looking at it, because it could be so precedent setting. Is this a hate crime? I mean, where are we going with this? We have attorney Patrick Delaney from Florida joining us now in America Tonight. Pat, thanks so much for coming on the show. And let me ask you the first thing up. How difficult, now this jury selection is complete, they're into this, how difficult is this going to be for the prosecutors to prove that, in fact, it was a hate crime?
Well, thank you, Catherine Shane. I appreciate being here today. It is actually going to be a very difficult case for the prosecutors to prove. New Jersey, like many states, have a newer hate crime, and this is going to be a big test for this Middlesex prosecutor to see if they can get a favorable ruling from the jury in this case against this former student. But like most crimes, it ultimately is going to come down to intent. And the question that they're going to need to deal with is whether they can convince a jury that the former roommate of the student who unfortunately killed himself actually acted with a bias towards homosexuals, if that was actually the motivation to his actions that kind of put into, you know, these things into motion where individual Tyler Clementi killed himself, throwing himself in the George Washington Bridge. And the thing that's kind of interesting about this, everyone who knows this is a national case, it's an interesting case, but it's really not about the death of Tyler Clementi. You're not going to hear that. It's going to be a four-week trial at least, and it's already been determined it's a suicide. So it's not about homicide. It's not about whether this roommate took actions that caused the death. It's about whether he engaged in this invasion of privacy, another charge, with the intent to create, against an individual who was a homosexual, if that was his motivation. And his defense attorney, of course, is saying, like, he may have been dumb and young and callous, but it's not a crime. So it's really one of those interesting cases where you have morality versus criminality. From a legal standpoint, you know, to get back to your original question, it's going to be a real tough thing to prove, but I think the prosecutor's office felt they had no choice. It had already gained national, if not international, status. It was a particular, like, cause celeb among the gay and lesbian community that something needed to be done about this cyberbullying. So it's a big test case, but it is tough.
Yeah, and speaking of a big test case, like you were saying, the precedent, that what I mentioned when we were talking about the invasion of privacy, depending on what the ruling is here, and the guy's name is Darun Ravi, by the way, who is being prosecuted for the hate crime, like you just said, but it could affect future legislation, not just with hate crime attached to it, but so much of what we're talking about is what you just said, cyberbullying. That's why it's getting so much national attention, because depending on what that jury rules, this could be used all over. This could be used as a case, precedent setting case across the United States for a whole bunch of other things that are going on with the internet, with invasion of privacy. Or there was the Midwest story where the woman was bullying the little girl the teenage girl down the street by writing notes to her and then humiliating her. And ultimately she also killed herself. And so there are a lot of things that are up in the air with the privacy and the web that are being tried that we talk about a lot on the show. A lot of people blow out the phone lines, Pat, to weigh in on what they think is fair and what they think is foul, because really the internet is the wild, wild west, and trying to separate all that, I think, legally is pretty tough. And again, that's why this is such a big case, don't you think?
I do think so, and I agree with that. And the thing that's very interesting for folks in different states is that you may think, you know, it's an interesting case, and it got a lot of press, and maybe I heard that on the national news, but why do I care in Montana or Wyoming or California? And you care because all of these states are grappling with this new issue, and it's whether you call it cyberbullying or internet-based crimes, and they you don't necessarily know how to deal with it. And it's no longer a matter of kind of a bullying that happens at a bus stop or in a schoolyard. The potential for so much more damage exists through this new technology. And the interesting thing is you have folks that maybe are of a different generation that are in various states' legislatures that are making the criminal code, but they're trying to catch up to this. So when you have, you know, you make a law, you have hate crimes, you have legislation that deals with hate crimes, often they're not individual codes that are involved, but they actually come on the back end in sentencing. So, but they don't know how to apply them, and you don't know where we end up. And you're going to have a lot of debate. I'm sure people are going to call in and say, you know, it's unfortunate they were bad people, and these kids that teased them were terrible, lousy individuals, and they'll be judged by the court of public opinion, and they will and are. But is it actually criminal? And that's true, but yet we also know, we're seeing that the damage that can be done through the internet is so much more than maybe we grew up with, you know, you and I. So it does actually affect all of us, and this is a case that's going to probably have implications to other states and how they're going to tweak their laws and apply their laws.
Yeah, and from the perspective of, you mentioned it for the gay agenda and what happens with anti-bullying programs, there have been accusations that this case will push that forward. But I think it goes deeper than that. I don't really think it's all about that. I think it's about the things that we just talked about, connecting the dots in the future as to what the invasion of privacy is, how do you regulate legally morality. Guess what? You really can't. I mean, you said at the court of public opinion, we can all rain down on Tyler Clemente and say what an idiot he was to do that. And then his attorneys will say, well, not Tyler Clemente, because he was the kid who committed suicide. Darun Ravi, as I was mentioning, what we can say is that he's an awful person, but prosecuting him for being an awful person and in the court of public opinion doing that is one thing, but legally making it stick is, I think, a completely tough, tall task for this prosecuting team. Who do you think, if you were to, you know, give me odds on this, who do you think has the best chance of winning this case? Do you think the prosecution or do you think the defense has an easier time, let's say, of trying it?
Well, I'd point to one little fact in this which sort of suggests where the prosecutors are thinking. They, before this went to trial, they made every effort to resolve it through a plea. They offered Mr. Ravi a no prison time, 600 hours of community service. And that was a real low ball offer. And I mean, that was an opportunity to put this behind you, but with, you know, a lot of work to do, but no threat of jail time. But Mr. Ravi declined to accept that plea. I think that shows that the prosecutors knew that it was going to be very difficult, because with all criminal violations, you always need intent. Intent is very difficult to prove in this case. And now what we have is the trial started, and it sounds somewhat cliche, but we've already had people take the stand, including a dorm mate of Mr. Ravi's, who incredibly throughout the, you know, I know that he doesn't have any bias towards homosexuals. In fact, you know, one of his very good friends is homosexual, which it sounds like a line from a sitcom, but that's where we are now, because they do need to prove that the intent was to act with bias into towards homosexuals. So it's an uphill battle for the prosecutor, but like I said earlier, I think the national attention from this case kind of put the prosecutor in a box where they really didn't have much choice, and I think they felt they had to either resolve it with the plea, which I thought was a generous plea, or go ahead to trial. I don't think it was a case that was going to just go away on its own, and would have been possibly damning for that office to not go forward with the trial and charges.
All right, Pat Delaney, thanks so much for coming on America Tonight. And full disclosure, I will mention that Patrick is my brother, by the way.
Yes, thank you, Catherine Shane. It was a pleasure being here.
And we're going to talk more about this on America Tonight. Take more of your phone calls because, again, privacy, hate crime, what happens with the jury? Is the jury going to be indifferent to this? I don't think so. I think it was tough to find a jury anyway. And as Patrick mentioned, he had a chance to take Ravi had a chance to take the hours and move on from there, not even have it go this far. And I think he might have taken a gamble in what the outcome of this trial will be. Hang with us, more to come on America Tonight.